CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor. The federal government is going through a transition that will be remembered for centuries, moving from paper and pen and even standalone computing systems with printouts, moving into the cloud. And along the way is a transition that has lots of acronyms, lots of special language. And when I watched FedGov Today, hosted by Francis Rose, I wrote down the acronyms as fast as I can, so when Francis joins me, I can say, "Hey, Francis, what's JWCC mean?" Good evening to you, Francis. Let's begin your conversations with three very professional men. Ryan MacArthur of the DISA, Defense Information Systems Agency. Justin Shirk of, I believe he's with a private firm, Accenture Federal Services. And Ken Bible, who's with Department of Homeland Security. They speak fast. They speak with acronyms. You know what they're talking about. Help me. What is JWCC that Ryan MacArthur keeps using it? Good evening to you.
Good evening, John. Thanks for having me on the program. The Joint Warfighting Cloud Capability is a program that Ryan manages that is a cloud computing program for the Department of Defense. And the loads, as they say, the functions that will happen in that cloud, the computing processes that will happen.
So he's the one who's converting to digital, showing the path to digital, because he's got a vast array of people who are seeking the digital world from where they are, standalone computing or computing that is connected over thousands of miles. He's the one who's shepherding this, designing it. What is his role?
Ryan's managing the program on behalf of the Defense Information Systems Agency. That's DISA, the acronym you referred to a few moments ago, and that's the Information Technology Implementation Execution Arm of the Department of Defense. DISA has a hosting and compute center within it that manages all of the cloud offerings that the Defense Information Systems Agency manages. And one of them is the JWCC, the Joint Warfighting Cloud Capability. Now, this capability is really important to the Department of Defense because it's designed for warfighters to use in warfighting. It's not just for back office functions or some of the less high profile functions that the Department of Defense wants to move to the cloud. It's for the tip of the spear stuff that is going to be really important to things that you and I have talked about before, like Joint All Domain Command and Control, which is the effort the department's undertaking to connect all of the sensors at all in all of the weapons platforms together so information can move back and forth from point to point so that any shooter, as the department says, can access any data anytime. JWCC is going to underpin all of those kinds of really intense, really high-profile computing capabilities.
What a vast challenge. But it gets worse or better, depending. We go to Justin Shirk of Accenture Federal Services. Now, his language was more understandable, but he's outside. He's not speaking in acronyms. He's talking about hyperconvergence. What does that mean, Francis?
What he means by hyperconvergence is the way that all of the technologies that the government is thinking about, talking about, and now starting to use are kind of colliding, and the way that they will all work together in the future. Artificial intelligence, machine learning, all of those kinds of technologies are all things that agencies are figuring out how to use, and they're doing this all in real time. They're moving some of these functions to the cloud. They're moving some of these, they're keeping some of these functions in-house. But the hyperconvergence that Justin's talking about is the way that all of these things ultimately will have to work together. And what he's proposing in a piece that he wrote and that we talked about on the show is how all of those things how agencies should be thinking about all of those things now in order to be able to put them together as time goes on.
I learned some terms of art from Justin. One was on-premise hardware. I think that means my iMac. I think that's what that refers to. It's not connected to it is connected to a cloud because everything's backed up on a cloud. Now,
that's right.
He had a list. There's existing cloud, there's lift and shift, and there's rebuild. What's he talking about?
Yeah, so existing in the cloud is something that is built specifically for cloud. Lift and shift means something, an application that one is already using that's not in the cloud and just taking it and putting it in the cloud instead of having it exist on a data center that is located on premises. And then the third item just refers to building something specifically for use in the cloud. It doesn't exist now, but it's for use in the cloud in the future.
And he also speaks of the multi-cloud environment. You were clever to say, why don't you just call it clouds? But that clearly doesn't have enough acronym to it.
I thought it might have sounded a little too spacey and ethereal for what people in the federal government technology space like to think about and how they like to talk. A multi-cloud environment just means that you use clouds that a number of different companies pin together. And the reason that there are a couple of reasons that multi-cloud environments are desirable. The greatest one is redundancy. A lot of federal agencies write into their contracts for cloud computing that they require what they call four nines to be up and running to a level four nines, which means 99 point and then four nines after the point percent of the time. But that's not 100% of the time. And for very high level, very important mission centric types of functions, 100% is really necessary. And so the multi-cloud environment proves to be the best fit for those kinds of missions, John.
Ken Bible is at Department of Homeland Security, which is vast. Someday I'm going to learn that it also runs Disneyland. It runs so many different things. So what we have here is an information security officer, Ken Bible, who works in a process of going to zero trust for DHS. He runs a council, the CISO Council. Francis, this is an endless job, and I mentioned it's an endless job that's under attack. We learned from headlines in these last days. China hacked Japan's sensitive defense networks, officials say. Tokyo has strengthened its defenses after a major cybersecurity breach. That would be target number one, DHS, right? That'd be the way into the system.
Yeah, well, that would be one way into the system. The challenge with an enterprise as big as the federal government is that there are a million different ways into the system. There was an effort a while ago called the Trusted Internet Connection Initiative to try to reduce the federal government's touch points to the internet to 50. That, in hindsight, didn't turn out to be feasible or realistic. But the government tries to do as much as it can to minimize the number of touch points for exactly the reason that you're talking about the story with Japan. But Ken wears a number of different hats at DHS. He is, as you mentioned, the Chief Information Security Officer, which means he's responsible for making and executing security policy across the Department of Homeland Security. He also is the leader of that council because each of those components, all the 22 components of DHS, each have their own information technology shops too. And so he coordinates among those 22 how the implementation of the and execution of the policies that he makes for the entire department, how they go among those 22 components. So that dialogue, as he described on the show, is important to him because it gives him visibility into what each of those 22 very different operations need from a security perspective, what they have already from an IT infrastructure perspective, and so on.
Ken, Justin Sherk also spoke of generative AI, which I take it means the AI I chat with and can't quite get my biography right. It works at it, I correct it, and then it comes back and tries again. But that's just an old novelist complaining about how the AI thinks I wrote a series of short stories. When it comes to AI in the government, are they embracing it? It does hallucinate, Francis, and that's part of the challenge as they build AI systems.
Yeah, and that's exactly the challenge that the government's wrestling with. I mean, they understand, I think, like the rest of the society, that it's kind of being forced on them, whether they want to deal with it or not. It's something they're going to have to deal with. And so what does that mean, given all the differences with the private sector that the government has? The federal government has privacy laws and regulations that it has to comply with. The private sector doesn't. It has security conditions that it has to deal with. And there are any number of different things like that that are requiring the government to think about the way that it it applies generative AI before it applies it. So there are a lot of pilot programs around generative AI in the federal government. There are some pockets where people are using it now, but it's not like the private sector where you or I can just go on ChatGPT and fire it up and ask it to do something. In a federal government environment, these leaders have to think about these things very, very carefully before they just go around pushing buttons and clicking on links.
FedGov Today is the program. It's a podcast twice a week, and it's a TV show on Channel 7, the local station in Washington, D.C., in which Francis Rose interviews the men and women who are the federal government right now in transition to the multi-cloud environment. I'm John Bell.
Stay tuned for more of CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor.